Hello, everyone, and welcome to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I'm going to be reading articles that were published in April of 2024 by the Geographic Society, so I hope you enjoy the program. We're going to begin way out in outer space with this article titled, Jupiter's Moon, Io, is a Volcanic Hellscape, and has been since the solar system began. Io, or some people pronounce it Io, is the most volcanic body known to science, and researchers have puzzled over its history for years. A new report suggests it was born this way, by Robin George Andrews. Earth's silvery moon is impressive in many ways, but it doesn't hold a candle to those of the solar system's gas giant planets. These moons are worlds unto themselves. Some, like Europa or Enceladus, have spectacular and perhaps even habitable liquid water oceans. And then there's Jupiter's moon, Io. Io is the most volcanic object known to science. A rust-hued orb, its rocky seas of lava are larger than cities, and its eruption plumes arc across the sky like infernal umbrellas. Yet until now, scientists have had little idea of Io's history, including for how long it's been so eruptive. Io's volcanism means that the moon resurfaces itself every million years. All worlds are dynamic, and those with beating geological hearts change, sometimes in extreme ways. Earth's past self, for example, was very different from its present form. What about Io? Was it always a fiery hellscape? To find out, astronomers studied its atmospheric chemistry to work out how long it might have taken for countless eruptions to shift its composition from an ancient starting point. Yet, as they reported today in the journal Science, Io looks to have more or less been continuously erupting for billions of years, perhaps even 4.5 billion years, or for as long as the solar system itself has existed. In other words, Io has been volcanically hyperactive for as long as the sun itself has been shining. We are seeing Io just as it's been all along, says Jani Rodabaugh, a planetary geologist at Brigham Young University, and who wasn't involved with the new work. That makes Io a time machine of sorts, whose unyielding heat engine, one powered by gravitational tides, can tell us about worlds both near and far. That process is going on throughout the solar system, as well as in exoplanets. Catherine DeClear, a planetary astronomer at Caltech, and the study's lead author. We study Io to better understand this universal process. A volcanic paradise. The solar system may not look that changeable from a human perspective, but it most certainly is on astronomic timescales. For example, in recent years, scientists have found that Saturn's iconic rings were not permanent fixtures, but recent decorations. They formed a few hundred million years ago, and they will fade away in a similar amount of time. Io, then, may not have always been the volcanic maestro it is today. But to find out, we must understand how volcanism works and why it's so dramatic. In 1979, two major science moments laid the groundwork. NASA's Voyager 1 spacecraft flew through the Jovian system and photographed ginormous plumes of volcanic matter rising above Io's surface. And an independent team of scientists calculated that Io may possess a potent but unusual source of heat. That mathematical prediction came from the strange voyages of Europa and Ganymede, a pair of moons close to Io. Every time Ganymede makes a complete orbit of Jupiter, Europa makes two, and Io makes four. This rhythm, known as a resonance, alters Io's own orbit, shaping it into something more elliptical than circular. When Io is closer to Jupiter on its wonky orbit, it experiences a stronger gravitational pull. When it's more distant, the gravitational pull of Jupiter is a little weaker. That causes tides on Io not dissimilar from the way Earth's moon makes tides in our own world's seas and oceans. But in this case, the tides are so strong that Io's surface trampolines up and down 330 feet, comparable to a small skyscraper. All that movement creates a lot of friction, which generates an astonishing amount of heat. Within Io, that heat melts a considerable amount of rock, perhaps creating an ocean of magma. And that powers some truly fierce eruptions at its surface, often taking the form of serpent-like rivers of lava, longer than most of Earth's watery versions, towering columns of sulfur-rich lava confetti, and cauldrons of liquid rock that act like portals into Io's underworld. "It's awesome," says DeClear. "It has these volcanoes that give us a window into what's happening inside the moon, which is something we don't usually have. The extreme nature of its volcanism doesn't stop with its eruptions. As far as sulfur-containing compounds, it coughs out gases made of sodium and potassium chloride. On Earth, we use these to season our food. It's like table salt gas that's coming out of the volcanoes," says DeClear. Much of its erupted material can also be jettisoned through Io's thin atmospheric bubble and into space. There it mingles with sunlight, gets electrically excited, before falling into Jupiter's magnetized skies and exploding as powerful aurora, the gas giant's version of Earth's northern and southern lights. Mad Moon. Io's source of heat, a mechanism known as tidal heating, is ultimately responsible for all this planetary sorcery. Scientists wanted to know if that tidal heating always existed within the moon. But as it's so volcanically active, its lava flows have quickly and repeatedly covered its surface, burying any evidence of ancient geologic processes. It's not possible to look at Io's surface and say something about what happened more than a million years ago, says DeClear. That's why she and her team took a different approach and looked to its skies instead. Io loses as much as 3 tons of material every single second to space through its volcanic outgassing and atmospheric erosion. One could imagine that Io's losing its mass like a comet, says Apurva Oza, a planetary astrophysicist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, who wasn't involved with the new work. Over time, that would mean that Io's modern-day eruptions will be relatively enriched in heavier versions, or isotopes, of various chemical elements than lighter ones, because lighter isotopes in the upper atmosphere can more easily escape into space. If the team could measure the present-day ratios of the atmosphere's heavy isotopes to lighter isotopes, they could calculate how long it would have taken for Io to get to that state from an original reservoir of subterranean but eruptible compounds within Io. Using the Atacama Large Millimeter/Submillimeter Array, or ALMA, in Chile to observe gases in Io's atmosphere, most notably sulfur, DeClair's team did just that. They also estimated the moon's original reservoir of heavier and lighter isotopes by using, among other things, ancient meteorites, which preserve a record of the average chemistry of the primeval era of the solar system. They found that the high proportion of heavier sulfur isotopes in today's Ionian atmosphere suggests that Io has lost 94% to 99% of its original sulfur reservoir. And the only way that makes sense and fits with pre-existing models of the evolution of Jupiter and its inner moons is that Io has been erupting for perhaps as long as 4.5 billion years. Orbital dance. The orbital dynamics of planetary satellites can get very chaotic, says James Tuttle Keene, a planetary scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, who was not involved with the new work. Moons can drift in and out of stable orbits, sometimes colliding or potentially being ejected from the solar system entirely. But it seems that Io, Ganymede, and Europa have been dancing about in a similar way for billions of years, and the Io we see today is somewhat representative of Io over its long history, says Keene. That's extraordinary in itself, but it also has implications for Io's neighbor, Europa. This icy orb not only has a liquid water ocean beneath its frozen shell, but it is thought to be kept warm and liquid by tidal heating, too. That means that if Io has been volcanically active for billions of years, then Europa's ocean may be similarly primeval. Maybe this has some implications for the long-term history of Europa's habitability, says DeClair. We don't know yet if this ocean contains life, but if it does, it owes its existence to the same eternal force that makes Io blaze with volcanic fire. And that completes the first article. The title was Jupiter's Moon Io is a Volcanic Hellscape and has been since the solar system began, by Robin George Andrews. The next article is titled, This Ancient Cure Was Just Revived in a Lab. Does it work? Theriac was the go-to miracle drug for paranoid monarchs from Nero to Elizabeth I, and crafted from ingredients such as opium and viper flesh, by Aaron Blakemore. For nearly 2,000 years, people living in the Near East and Europe relied on one miracle medicine to protect themselves from poison, plague, and a host of other maladies. This magical cure-all was known as theriac, a black, sticky substance crafted from dozens of ingredients, including black pepper, bread, opium, and viper flesh. Theriac eventually faded into history with the rise of modern medicine, but a team of Polish researchers has now recreated theriac from a 17th century apothecary recipe to study the miraculous claims that surround the cure. An ancient remedy. Theriac was a hit in 17th century Poland, but its popularity and reach went far beyond Eastern Europe, and the idea of a universal antidote stretches all the way back to antiquity. Ancient sources like Galen and Pliny suggest that versions of theriac existed from at least the 2nd century BC, and their popularity soon spread in elite circles. Among the most famous seekers of cure-all was Mithridates VI an Anatolian emperor and noteworthy opponent of ancient Rome, who ruled from 120 to 63 BC. Mithridates was obsessed with poisons and their cures. Arsenic was called the powder of succession at the time, says Adrian Mayer, a research scholar in Stanford University's Department of Classics, who was not involved in the study. In her biography of Mithridates, she tracks how that obsession sparked an expensive hunt for a way to evade poisoning, leading to the creation of a lasting theriac recipe. Haunted by the possibility of poisoning, and in consultation with medical experts from far and wide, Mithridates delved into the human body's ability to become immune to certain poisons by ingesting small amounts of toxins over time, a concept known in modern medicine as Mithridatism. It's all in the dosage, says Major, and Mithridates' daily dose of poison-laced theriac seemed to work. He died by suicide at 70 after poisoning his daughters. Though the recipe he used is lost, it appears to have been passed to other nobles, whose court doctors brewed and experimented with it. Though their recipes varied and dabbled in a vast variety of expensive ingredients, the basic makeup of theriac usually included honey, spices like cinnamon and cardamom, and a variety of herbs, barks, oils, and even wood. At some point after Mithridates, poison was removed from its long list of ingredients. Nevertheless, theriac became a daily must-have for paranoid monarchs from Nero, whose court doctor replaced Mithridates' snake venom in the medicinal mixture with viper flesh, to Elizabeth I. Mayer notes that the opium that later became standard in such mixtures really ensured patient compliance. An everyday antidote. Theriac's royal heritage was part of its appeal, and it eventually became a widely available, though expensive, remedy for everyday people. For the cost of a chicken, Jacob Weglortz, an assistant professor of history at the University of Wrocław, explains a 17th century Polish plebeian could buy some of the substance from a licensed apothecary who had been trained for that purpose. For Weglortz, who studies the history of medicine and the early modern era, it wasn't enough to read about theriac in medical textbooks. He wanted to see if it was possible to make the kind of theriac that was sold in Poland centuries ago. With funding from Poland's National Science Center, he teamed up with another historian and two pharmacists to try to reconstruct a 400-year-old theriac. It would be the first time modern researchers with a pharmaceutical background attempted to make theriac, and the most complete reconstruction and analysis of the drug. They relied on a 1630 recipe from Paul Guldenius, the city apothecary of what is now Torun, Poland. Guldenius was one of a small group of apothecaries licensed to produce and sell theriac, and like his colleagues, he prepared the brew in public with what the researchers call much pomp and ceremony. These acts of public theriac production were a way to ensure total transparency about what went into the medicine, and a way to advertise to a curious public. They displayed all of these precious, costly ingredients during public preparations, says Mayer. Written in Latin, Guldenius's recipe lists the names and quantities of 61 ingredients. Weglortz and his team worked to decode the Latin and common names of the compounds used, cross-checking the recipe with contemporary books and other texts like diaries and letters. Luckily, Guldinus was a thorough recipe writer, including the exact weights of the theriac components. Cardamom, allspice, wood, sweet wine, and wheat bread were all part of the potion. But his theriac wasn't just a catch-all. It had two vital ingredients that were key to both its effectiveness and its prestige: opium and viper flesh. Opium would have had an analgesic effect, while viper flesh was supposed to confer immunity to snake bites and have a drying effect on the body. According to the theory of bodily humors, widely accepted at the time, spicy and intense flavors had the ability to dry out humors that predisposed a person to illness or infirmity. Recreating thoriac. It took 4 years to collect the ingredients needed to recreate Guldinus's brew. First, the researchers turned to suppliers of pharmaceutical-grade raw materials. But some of the herbs and spices were unavailable or not grown in the European Union, so the researchers either sought out the plant itself or used garden websites to source ingredients. Even for something simple like saffron or mint, we would get the plant on our own or buy it from a certified supplier, not a grocery store, says Weglortz. Then there was the issue of viper flesh. The team didn't want to kill snakes themselves, and Poland isn't exactly known for its abundance of reptiles. But vipers do live in its mountainous regions, and Weglortz traversed Poland by car, following tips from foresters who alerted him when they found a viper that had died of natural causes or became roadkill. Eventually, the team obtained almost 7 ounces of fresh viper flesh, which was dried and then incorporated into the theriac. Opium has proven even trickier. Poland's drug policies are strict, though individuals can get permission to grow opium poppies. The team is still trying to legally obtain 3.5 ounces of the drug, which was excluded from the brew for now. After studying the potential effects of the theriac ingredients, many known for their therapeutic properties, the researchers got to work in a lab at the University of Wrocław, boiling, mixing, drying, and adding in the components. It took 2 days for the pharmaceutical experts to combine the ingredients, cooking them down over low heat. The result, a sticky, molasses-like clump, would have been segmented into small pills that patients combined with water or wine. But scholars note that theriac was also sometimes used on the skin or in the eyes. They produced 9 pounds of theriac, which was then set aside to mature for a whole year. We didn't taste it, says Weglortz, but if we did, we could say the taste is really warming. It's hot. It's spicy. It has the taste of tar. The inclusion of herbs and spices like cinnamon, valerian, lavender, and black pepper seemed to confer a whiskey-like burn to the concoction, which other scholars surmise was part of the medicine's appeal. Though theriac contains ingredients that do have properties that can help human health, the researchers believe the placebo effect, helped along by royal influencers who relied on the drug, was behind most of theriac's purported ability to counteract poison and keep a person in good health. but that doesn't mean it's not worth recreating. Both Mayer and Weglaerts note that theriac is important evidence for the extent of scientific inquiry and folk remedies in antiquity and beyond. Now his team is looking at variations of theriac that incorporated popular substances whose use came and went over time. Like us, people of the past were susceptible to medical fads, even if those fads involved opium, viper flesh, and a sticky black substance rumored to cure kings and peasants alike. And that completes the article. The title was "This Ancient Cure Was Just Revived in a Lab. Does it work?" It was written by Aaron Blakemore. And that also completes the program for today. I hope you enjoyed it. This has been the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your reader today. I've been reading articles that were published in April of 2024 by the Geographic Society. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to the premier programming offered by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And if you missed an article that you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on the broadcast info and audio, then click on Demand. The next page shows you a list of articles available to you. Hopefully you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.